Harry Tam as an OG. Well, some might think it's the original gangster. I'm referring to an older gentleman. Thanks for joining us on the show, Harry. Tēnā koe.
Yeah, tēnā koe,
Harry. It's been a while since we've had a yarn. Harry's a lifetime member of the mongrel mob. The Prime Minister-elect Luxon says life for gang members is going to get a lot harder under his government. They planned for gangs regarding banning gang patches in public, making gang membership an aggravating factor in criminal sentencing. And he says, even though he knows of Harry, he's got no intention of meeting with Harry. This is rhetoric that we've heard before, Harry Tam, cracking down on gangs, seemingly to appease middle New Zealand and those in the leafy suburbs who are nervous because they don't perhaps have any connections. Most Māori do have connections with people who live gang lifestyles or on the fringes of our communities, as you have for a long time. He says he doesn't want to meet you. Would you have wanted to meet him?
Look, Dale, you know, my thing is that, you know, I'm always happy to talk to anyone that's prepared to listen. And, you know, I mean, I didn't expect that he would want to meet with me. It's rather unfortunate that, you know, that he doesn't want to be informed fully on what situations are and how they've arrived to where they are. So, yeah, I think you're right when you're saying that he just plays to his constituent. And in some ways, that's actually quite irresponsible because, you know, these measures have never been able to reduce gang membership. And at the end of the day, there's a hell of a cost to middle New Zealand that we'll have to pay for it in taxes. So, again, are people fully aware of what the unintended consequences of these things are? You know, the tough on crime has a certain resonance with people that are ill-informed about how these situations arrive and what the best measures are to reduce this in the longer term. And unfortunately, we've never gone down that road for a very long time, and thus the situation we're in now.
They're talking about gang membership being included as an aggravating factor in criminal sentencing. How does that sit with you, Harry?
Well, at this stage, I don't really want to say too much about that because, you know, it hasn't become law. We haven't seen the detail of exactly what they're proposing or how they propose to go about it. But in the main, I mean, you know, you can keep on adding to that sort of you know, legislation, but the reality of it is you just can't legislate this problem out of existence. We have been doing this in recent times since 1972, you know, when Sir Norman Kirk wanted to take the bikes away from the bikies. So your first introduction of this sort of modern gang legislation, if you like to call it that, goes back to the 72 election. And, you know, in that time, gang membership has never been reduced, apart from that we glit with from 81 to 87. But ever since then, gang membership has always been on the rise. And more recently, it's on the rise exponentially. And that's something that is very worrying. But having more legislation doesn't actually reduce the problem. If anything, it might even exacerbate it. For example, like, we know that prisons can be prime recruitment grounds for gangs. And the more draconian you are, the more you have in prison, the more recruitment that's going to go on. And, of course, therein lies the problem. You know, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, the Prime Minister-elect can ignore talking to me, and that's fine. Many of them have. But there was a time when I was working in government, and we were able to talk to, you know, our minister at that time was Parikura and Pitta, and they were both very responsive. Because, again, they know their communities and, you know, they know what needs to be done and they supported the efforts that we put into it. And we made some great gains where, you know, gangs were sitting together in hui and preparing things for the future, doing pro-social things with their communities. And we had an opportunity to change things. But unfortunately, you know, the consecutive governments let those initiatives slip away. So, you know, to me, it's, you know, I would have thought someone who's the Prime Minister-elect would show some wisdom. And certainly what I'm seeing, I'm not seeing a lot of wisdom. I'm seeing a lot of rhetoric, but not a lot of wisdom.
you've been active over the years in finding work for you guys. But, of course, you get the feeling that this government doesn't want to encourage pipelines of that type. In fact, they seem to be putting a squeeze left, right and centre. Sees that as supporting gangs. The other kaupapa, I guess, Harry, is, you know, and I agree that those who have lived experience are best positioned to help those get off the gear, which you and others have advocated for, received some funding. Seems that the door's been shut there as well.
Yeah, well, I think this, the thing is that, you know, if you take a look at the, you know, the backdrop leading up to the election and even now, and I'm sad that it's continued on, is this whole sort of this divisiveness, you know, dividing people, you know, the bottom feeders, you know, the middle New Zealand, you know, we're dividing our nation into these rhetoric titles. And I would have hoped that, you know, given that National has succeeded in becoming government, that it's actually a time for unifying the country, particularly, you know, the crisis that we're hitting in, that they keep on telling us. But yet the sort of persistent division is a concern, and that's what I mean when I said, you know, maybe he shows a lack of wisdom. You know, any good leader would focus on how to unify the country and unify the people for a common purpose, but that doesn't seem to be the case with this Prime Minister-elect. But, hey, you know, early days for him, and, like I say, you know, like people said that, you know, he's new to politics, and I thought a piece that Bill English wrote the other week about, you know, reminding them this is not a corporate, you're a Prime Minister, you're not a CE, you know, and maybe, you know, give him some time, maybe he'll come around. But for now, you know, I'm just happy to just ignore what he says. I mean, he can, you know, yeah. No well, point talking to a deaf person.
I see Mark Mitchell, who's a spokesperson on Law and Order for the Nats, says gangsters can cover up their tattoos with foundation. Police are employing special powers, Harry, in Tairawhiti, to your Potuki Whakatane, giving officers extended search and seizure abilities in an effort to crack down on gang activity. You say that we need pro-social solutions to gang problems. This doesn't seem like pro-social solutions. What are your concerns about their approach with extended search and seizure abilities for the cops?
Well, you know, I've already said previous in other media that, you know, as far as I know, you know, current legislation, well, you know, legislation around firearms, you know, the police have always had powers to search vehicles and homes of the suspicion of illegal firearms and drugs. So I had some sympathy to what Mark was saying yesterday about why did you have to take a warrant, you know, that could take days before you'd conducted the searches. So I have some sort of sympathy to what he's saying, because my understanding, certainly in my past life, you know, when I've been involved in situations where gangs have been in confrontation, I've been in proximity and I've been turned over by the police, and that's the legislation they've always cited. So I didn't really understand, you know, why that was needed. And I think this is part of that concerns me, that's been played out, that you're getting political parties or governments that are playing politics with this thing, competing with each other on who could be the toughest on gangs and who's the toughest on crime. And we're passing sort of legislation that you kind of really question, do we really need it? Because, you know, police were able to do that in the past without it, you know, so why do you need it now? But you know, putting that aside, you know, I've been involved in mediation between gang disputes, you know, particularly ones that have involved homicides, you know, such as in Wurupara, and we've always had good outcomes. But, you know, there's two stages in that, you know, and I'm aware that the police now have their own teams, but they deal with it, what I call the firefighting, which is, you know, putting out the fire. But there's no fire prevention, you know. So you can dampen down a confrontation. That's actually not that hard to do if you know what the hell you're doing. But the challenge is, how do you create change attitudes where people start seeing a future for themselves and working towards that future rather than working against each other? Because that's what's missing in this whole equation. And as the numbers grow, and I fear, you know, we've got Christmas coming around. You know, with the larger numbers, there'd be more gang people circulating around the country. They will come across each other. And that's where those volatile situations happen. Now, you know, we can talk about tough on gangs, but what's the consideration for what's ahead of us? Is it just, how long is it going to take before legislation comes in for putting foundation on faces? And my God, we've really lost the plot.
You'd have to think so. Hey, Harry, you know, the mob, the BPs, have been around a long time, and in many communities have just got used to that reality. But the 501s have come in, and, many of them, got a bit of an FTW sort of approach going on. So, you know, how's the arrival of the deportees, the 501s, the Comancheros, the Mongols, et cetera, being set up in NZ? How's that affecting the way that gang culture in this country is perceived?
I don't have a lot to do with those guys. I mean, I have some empathy for them in the way that, you know, they get dumped over here, not on their own volition, but at the direction of the country that they were growing up in. And in terms of support for them, my understanding is very little support from this end. And again, that goes back to this rhetoric of being tough on gangs. And so what I've seen is that the growth in gang membership is in some ways a response to that. You know, the local gangs for a long time they had a passive recruitment policy. And in fact, throughout the 90s, many of the gangs were reducing their numbers. And then when the 501s, as we label them, started coming to New Zealand, we saw a growth in gang membership with the local gangs, because they saw these people, you know, moving in on their turf, so they'd muscled up, and so you kind of get this muscling up bidding war. And again, unless we actually address the causes of this growth in membership, you know, these things continue to happen, and gangs don't need patches to exist. I mean, let's be clear about that. You know, behaviours don't require patches. You know, there are more people that are convicted for murder than aren't gang members every year. So let's really be clear about what is it that we really want. You know, if this the sort of stepping up that the sort of anti each other, we will get more anti attitudes across the country, not just in middle New Zealand, not just in the bottom feeders, but that will become our ethos, is to be against each other. And that's a hell of a destructive culture to evolve. It's just politically irresponsible, to be honest.
Harry, thanks for sharing some cordial. Look forward to a cordial down the track. Yummy.
Nāmen.
Tēnā koe. Harry Tam with us, senior figure.